I would like to acknowledge the Kaurna people who are the traditional custodians of the land here. I would also like to pay my respects to elders past and present of Kaurna country.
You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
These words for the chalice lighting were written from the perspective of Jessica Star Rockets. Perhaps her specific memories will elicit your own. She writes, "Every Sunday morning growing up, my father would take us to Mass at St. Peter's Catholic Church. I love the hymns and the smells and bells, as they would say. But the sermons were kind of a bore. So I would occupy myself by counting the cuts and scrapes and bruises on my father's hands. My dad was an electrician and a farmer, working with his hands from before the sun came up until long after it went down. So every week I would take his large hands in my little ones, turning them over, examining, discovering new bruises, and keeping track of the healing of the old ones. I would count the wounds and whisper the tally in his ear. I love that he let me hold and investigate his hands in this way, snuggled up next to him in the pew, in the quiet of the church with just the priest's voice in the background. Having two jobs that demanded his attention, my dad didn't always have time for such intimacies, except on Sunday morning. And I took pride in those wounds. It was evidence of how hard my dad worked to take care of his family. He was a man who was often uncomfortable with expressing affection, but I could see in those hands how much he loved me. Was my dad a good dad? Was he there for me when I needed him? Did he protect me and provide for me? Did he care about me? When I asked myself those questions, good morning and welcome to our service of worship. This is a service because it means to serve you. And this is worship from worth-ship because it serves you by raising to worth things that matter. My name is Aaron Pose, a member of this congregation, and I'm leading this service today. I welcome you here on behalf of generations of Unitarians who have worshipped in similar gatherings in South Australia since 1854. We are a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to fashion, and most importantly, follow their own spiritual path, any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work towards a better world for all. We welcome you to join with us after the service for conversation. Tea and coffee requires more volunteers than we have at present. Hint. Hint. We invite the young Unitarians up to the front, or young at heart if you like, to listen to our story.
I'm not going to use the mic because a lot of the words you will be able to read on the screen if you can't quite hear me, but I will try to project. It's a story, because Aaron has chosen the topic, masculinity. It's a story without girls in it today. It's a story about two brothers. And they're called Rocky and Louie. Louie had the big brother, best big brother anywhere. Rocky taught him to kick a footy so it sailed between the sticks nearly every time. He taught him how to bounce the footy, do a hand, so they couldn't smash it. But Rocky taught Louie much more than that. He taught him about country. Thanks to Rocky, Louie knew how to walk on their country. "Don't step on the new shoots," Rocky said. "It wouldn't step on you." He knew he had to set lots of little cool fires so you wouldn't get a big, great big hot one. "Fires are hungry, just like you," Rocky explained. "Too right," Uncle Phil said. "They can't grow if there's nothing to eat." Louie and Rocky had once made a proper hunting boomerang together. While they turned the soft green wood smooth and hard, Rocky taught Louie about respecting the country's creatures. "You've got to be smart," he explained. "Think about where your tucker comes from." Then Mum taught them both how to make everyone's mouths water. Rocky even taught Louie their songs. "Kangaroo is bouncing on my country looking for his food. I have a beautiful, beautiful country, so he has beautiful, beautiful food." Louie was so happy living and learning in his land every day that he could sometimes hop high and long like Joey's mum, just for fun. And he'd go head over heels like Joey. Can you do a flip? Then he and Rocky would run with Emu until their legs gave way. After that, they'd lie on a cool, flat rock and wait till their head against his mother's chest. Rocky could never stay still for long. Louie didn't think anything would ever change, but then one day Rocky came and found him. "I'm leaving," Rocky said. "I've got big dreams, I've got to go chase them." "I want to go with you," Louie said. "No, you don't," Rocky said softly. "This is here. This here is the place where you belong." "So do you," whispered Louie. For the last 3 days before Rocky left, it seemed like he was always busy. The men had men's business to share with him. His mates wanted to play one last game, and then another last game. And his mum and his aunties just wanted to fill him up. Louie was afraid there wouldn't be any time for him to say a proper goodbye to show Rocky how he really felt. Then he thought of something. Louie searched all over the country for the perfect branch. Uncle Phil helped him split the branch in two. Then Louie poured all the love he had in his heart into one of the pieces so Rocky would know. Louie thought he'd be all right once he'd given Rocky his special gift. But when the time finally came for Rocky to go, his heart started to hurt all over again. "Hey, don't be sad, little brother," Rocky said. "I may be going away, but I'll never forget where I belong. Besides, you did such a good job on that boomerang. I know it will come back." And it did. And when you have a look at the last picture in the book, you can sort of guess what Rocky was up to. And he's got certificates. He's getting his stuff from home as well. But that's the story of Rocky and Louie. And it's time for you guys to go to Sunday Club now.
It is our tradition to share the significant events of our spiritual lives in an open forum of fellowship. I invite you now to deepen and to bind that fellowship and covenant with one another by sharing with us any recent event that has been significant in your spiritual life. And mark that sharing by lighting a candle from our chalice and telling us as briefly as possible about it. As some things lie too deep for words, you're also very welcome to light a candle in silence. If you choose not to share, you can still take part in widening the circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind and refraining from comment. I open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity. I'll light the first candle now.
Take your mind back, I don't know when. Sometime when it always seemed to be just us and them. Girls that wore pink and boys that wore blue. Boys that always grew up better men than me and you. What's a man now? What's a man mean? Is he rough or is he rugged? Is he cultural and clean? Now it's all changed. It's got to change more. We think it's getting better, but nobody's really sure. And so it goes, go round again. But now and then we wonder who the real men are. See the nice boys dancing in pairs, golden earring, golden tan, and blow wave in their hair. Sure, they're all straight, straight as a line. All the gays are machos, can't you see the leather shine? You don't want to sound dumb, don't want to offend. So don't call me a faggot, not unless you are a friend. Then if you're tall and handsome and strong, you can wear the uniform and I could play along. And so it goes, go around again. But now and then we wonder who the real men are. Time to get scared. Time to change plan. Don't know how to treat a lady. Don't know how to be a man. Time to admit what you all defeat. Cause there's women running past you and you just drag your feet. Man makes a gun, man goes to war. Man can kill and man can drink and man can take a whore. Kill all the blacks, kill all the reds. But if there's war between the sexes, then they'll need below left. And so it goes, go round again.
Over the last few months, another layer of national discussion on toxic masculinity has come about, mostly in response to a rise in women's ire. A very understandable anger towards an array of bad male behaviours centred on Parliament House. This is really much bigger than the self-important men in Parliament House, though. It extends into the general public worldwide. And we can also recall the relatively recent mess with Hollywood men's sexual exploitation of famous actors. A conversation on toxic masculinity has been ongoing before the term toxic masculinity even existed. But what is toxic masculinity, really? Toxic, certainly. It poisons all it touches, not unlike a favoured plant becoming riddled with fungal disease. Indeed, Chinese feminists coined a term not yet well known here in Australia. The term is Zhu Nan Ai, translating to straight man cancer. A cancer that spreads, choking the lifeblood out of all humanity. Women certainly are rather obviously affected, but so are others. Children, men, other genders, animals, the entire ecology of this planet. But is it masculinity really an inherent part of what it is to be male? I think not. I see it as masking masculinity. This toxicity, which dominates the scope of male symbology, has made it difficult to know what real masculinity actually is. Most of the solid, reliable pillars of maleness are now revealed to be riddled with this toxicity, as though eaten by white ants. This has led to a poorly known and understood crisis in men. We don't know who we are. Young boys, old men, young men are a little lost at the seaside. This drives much resentment, often towards women and feminists in particular. But they are the messenger crying out in pain and anger, not the cause. Some males have doubled down in toxicity, hoping that holding more tightly to the illusion will give them a sense of reality. Some have taken the agnostic meh approach. Many, like me, are searching and questioning. Ironically, though it appears masculinity is on the decline, it is toxic masculinity that is in decline. Actual masculinity is on the rise. In some ways, I am blessed, despite how painful it has been to have my comfort stripped away. Due to being gay, hearing impaired, and connected to the transgender and vegan communities, I have been forced to abandon toxic masculinity, along with many other aspects of societal normality. The cruelty directed towards me by that toxic, terrible behaviour forced me to look beyond it. And there, faintly in the distance, is the real thing. Tenuous, but existent. One of the longer roots of this toxic masculinity lies in our Roman past. Mars, representing war, violence, warden, feral, savage, virility as a kind of life force, vis, or virtue, virtus, and of course, men. Ultimately, Mars seems to be a bit of a toxic man god. Oh, how many men pretend the godhood. The priesthood of the Arval brothers called on Mars to drive off rust, with its double meaning of wheat fungus and the red oxides that affect metal, a threat to both iron farm implements and weaponry. In the surviving text of their hymn, the Arval brothers invoke Mars as ferus, savage, or feral, like a wild animal. Rust, disease, and losing one's tools of growth, defence, and war must have seemed a horrifying, unmanning risk in those days. Virility literally means manliness. It is an weir, the word for man. So here we are talking about masculinity being an overconfident physical ape-like beast grunting with strength and virility. And yet there was a word about Mars in there that might not be toxic. Almost overlooked, a warden, a protector of sorts. It's difficult to know, but this might well be more mired in fatherhood, our real primitive behaviours, and it persists. Rather than an aggressor, a deactivation of aggression. A complex role for defence requires aggression. Warden might mean something deeper than defence. To look after or to nurture in a way quite different to motherhood. And I'm going to talk to you about a brief story of a friend of mine. He was in the city. And in the city, two people, a man and a woman, were arguing very, very strongly about the Palestinian and Jewish situation. And I don't know which side was which, but the man was getting very agitated, and to the point where he was likely to attack the woman. And my friend interfered. And what he did was simple and warden-like activity. He simply invited the man to tell him what he was trying to express. He said, this woman's not really that interested in what you're saying, but I'm interested. Could you share that with me? And by doing such and drawing him away, he deactivated the situation. This is a different kind of nurturing. Where to look for masculinity more grounded to reality? Nature gives us a few clues. In nature, men are not always the strongest. Sometimes they're nothing more than mobile sperm donors. Male same-sex activity and relationships exists quite commonly in animals. Being gay is literally natural because it's in nature. What role do these males play? It's not procreation. Testosterone, nature's so-called male hormone for humans. A trans man friend of mine describes his experience with testosterone. Height, hair growth, voice lower, changes the shape of the face. Upper body muscle, less hip fat, more slim. Increased sex drive, that's quite strong. Clitoris growth, male pattern baldness, damn. Bone density increases, the flavours more. Risk-taking behaviour, example, speeding. Anger feels more like a protective instinct, more control over connection or disconnection with emotions. Yet testosterone is not necessarily masculinity. He identified as a man well before testosterone was taken. Now, risk-taking behaviour when speeding is generally not a good idea. However, there are times when taking a chance and the possibility of failure or a negative consequence is worthwhile. Testosterone driving men into risk-taking necessitates a form of masculinity that learns to make better use of it. To learn when to follow this drive and when to shut it down. In essence, masculine wisdom can be about balanced risk-taking, when to jump in and do it, and when to forget about it because the probable negatives outweigh the positives, like there. As such, wiser men can teach it to younger boys and men so they can avoid mistakes the wiser man likely already made. Masculinity might involve the better aspects of risk-taking. Nature's biggest hint, however, is so simple it's easy to miss when you go into all these details. Again and again in nature, you can observe a balance between male and female. Males and females often differ in role, sometimes quite markedly, and dominate in an area they excel at, but overall, neither are better. They are just different cogs of the wider ecosystem. This is an obvious fundamental mistake in human culture. We overvalue males and expect them to be better in everything. We are not. We male humans are also just cogs in a wider ecosystem. An ecosystem which values females no less and no more. This goes right to the core of our first and last principles. Namely, first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part. I have also looked in the shadows where traditional role models of malehood and programming are challenged. Being gay lets me be acutely aware that sexual masculinity is not just about procreation. Boys just want to have fun too. Men's self-identification is heavily centred on sexuality, and especially the phallus, from old Greek to swell, inflate. Yet trans men and many other men who have experienced injury, cancer and so forth, go on to be masculine quite without gonadal drive. What do they feel about masculinity? Trans men who have lived much of their early lives in the feminine role have therefore skipped much of the toxic male programming given in those early years. Ironically and rather awkwardly, it means they have an opportunity to be far more in touch with their masculinity than most cis men, like me. For trans women, their discovery of life as a woman after having lived the role of a man for many years gives them an opportunity to understand the more toxic parts of masculinity, because they wear it. Many have lamented to move from a power so presumed it's hidden to having to fight to get basic levels of service and attention. One thing I've observed from a wide variety of men is presence seems to be a consistent theme. Since men typically have poor verbal and social communication education, many men communicate by presence, simply being there, showing up. Often entwined with this presence is a desire for physical action. It doesn't even matter much what the action is. It might be lifting boxes for charity, or it might be simple sport, or it might be stuffing the face. It's quite possible that masculinity favours presence and action as a form of acceptance and connection. Veganism and vegetarianism blow one solid form of toxic masculinity out of the water. That is, meat makes a man. Indeed, there are many symbols of masculinity which, on reflection, just aren't real. Meat is only one of them. Cars, footy, beer, and grease all have the social expectation of masculinity, but are really all very much non-gendered. Women can be involved in these just as much if they choose to. Though not a part of veganism per se, a rather complex movement of herbivore men exists in Japan. They represent significant numbers, and it's estimated to include more than half of young men in their 20s and 30s. Half of young men. The philosopher Masahiro Moeka defines herbivore men as kind and gentle men, without being bound by manliness, do not pursue romantic relationships voraciously, and have no aptitude for being hurt or hurting others. Gentle. It reminds one of the archaic term gentleman. Men who don't enjoy violence, who take on caring and kind activities, are on the rise, especially in the younger generations. Music, art, charity, peaceful activism, looking after kids and other vulnerable people. Maybe, to a degree, actual masculinity is simply the polar opposite of toxic masculinity.
The Health Benefits of Tears by Judith Orloff, MD. For over 20 years as a physician, I've witnessed time and again the healing power of tears. Tears are your body's release valve for stress, sadness, grief, anxiety, and frustration. Also, you can have tears of joy, say when a child is born, or tears of relief when a difficulty has passed. In my own life, I'm grateful when I can cry. It feels cleansing, a way to purge pent-up emotions so they don't lodge in my body as stress symptoms such as fatigue or pain. To stay healthy and release stress, I encourage my patients to cry. For both men and women, irritants reduce stress hormones, and they contain antibodies that fight pathogenic microbes. Our bodies produce three kinds of tears: reflex, continuous, and emotional. Each kind has different healing roles. For instance, reflex tears allow your eyes to clear out noxious particles when they're irritated by smoke or exhaust. The second kind, continuous tears, are produced regularly to keep our eyes lubricated. These contain a chemical called lysozyme that functions as an antibacterial and protects our eyes from infection. Tears also travel to the nose through the tear duct to keep the nose moist and bacteria free. Typically, after crying, our breathing and heart rate decrease and we enter into a calmer biological and emotional state. Emotional tears have special health benefits. Biochemist and tear expert Dr. William Frey at the Ramsey Medical Center in Minneapolis discovered that reflex tears are 98% water, whereas emotional tears also contain stress hormones that get excreted from the body through crying. After studying the composition of tears, Dr. Frey found that emotional tears shed these hormones and other toxins that accumulate during stress. Additional studies also suggest that crying stimulates the production of endorphins, our body's natural painkiller and feel-good hormones. And interestingly, humans are the only creatures known to shed emotional tears, though it's possible that elephants and gorillas do too. Other mammals also saltwater crocodiles produce reflex tears that are protective and lubricating. Crying makes us feel better even when a problem persists. In addition to physical detoxification, emotional tears heal the heart. You don't want to hold tears back. Patients sometimes say, "Oh, please excuse me for crying. I was trying hard not to. It makes me feel weak." My heart goes out to them when I hear this. I know where that sentiment comes from. Parents who are uncomfortable around tears. A society that tells us we're weak for crying, in particular, that powerful men don't cry. I reject these notions. The new enlightened paradigm of what constitutes a powerful man or woman is someone who has the strength and self-awareness to cry. These are the people who impress me, not those who put up some macho front of faux bravado. Try to let go of outmoded, untrue conceptions about crying. It is good to cry. It is healthy to cry. This helps to emotionally clear sadness and stress. Crying is also essential to resolve grief when waves of tears periodically come over us after we experience a loss. Tears help us process the loss so we can keep living with open hearts. Otherwise, we're set up for depression. When a friend apologised for curling up in the fetal position on my floor, weeping, depressed over a failing romance, I told her, "Your tears blessed my floor. There's nothing to apologise for." I've been this enthusiastic about crying for years. In fact, during my psychiatric residency, when supervisors and I watched videos of me with patients, they'd point out that I'd smile when a patient cried. "That's inappropriate," they'd say. I disagreed then, and I still do. I wasn't smiling because my patients were depressed or grieving. I was smiling because they were courageously healing depression or other difficult emotions with tears. I was happy with their breakthrough. In my life too, I love to cry. I cry whenever I can. I wish I could more. Thank God our bodies have this capacity. I hope you too can appreciate the experience. Let your tears flow to purify stress and negativity.
Let's spend a few minutes talking to our neighbour, maybe someone you don't know too well, about what you think masculinity might be. Please remember, this is more about what masculinity is rather than what it is not. I'll give about 5 to 10 minutes on this. So just when the conversation gets interesting, we need to end it. So if we could wind it up now a little bit. It is unclear at this time whether masculinity is a mere social construct or if it is something truly grounded. It is clear that masculine expression is much more diverse than traditionally presented, and that, of course, makes defining it more challenging. It is also understood quite widely that masculinity is present in any gender, including women. Women, men, and other genders are therefore complementary parts of humanity, not opposites sitting on binary poles of masculine and feminine. Though masculinity is a difficult topic for presentation due to the strongly held beliefs on this topic, my aim today was to present a different perspective and to encourage what I feel is a long overdue conversation about what masculinity is rather than what it isn't. Masculinity is a topic bigger than me, bigger than all the masculinity in this room. And our understanding of it is unfolding in its infancy. Expelling toxic masculinity is still important, but unless we have some grounded and healthy masculinity to replace it with, the toxic behaviours can easily re-establish themselves. This is akin to filling a power vacuum or replacing a habit. It's not about bringing men down, but building men up. Something acutely needed at this time where the false masculinity is failing us so much. There is never a price for your presence here, and it is freely given to you all. However, a free church is not actually free to run, and we appreciate any offering, big or small, as you should choose to do so. However you contribute, and whatever the amount, your offering to this church is most welcome. Contributions can be made on the Tap the Voice device in the foyer over there, or leaving an amount on the altar here. Or you can talk to us and do something more through bank accounts, etc. Contributions. Bearing in mind this will be a fairly long benediction, please stand as you're able. Adapted from the conclusion of The Bones and the Breath, A Man's Guide to Eros, The Sacred Masculine and the Wild Soul by L.R. Hartsong, 2014. You must depart the old life that has grown too small, heeding your curious, beguiling allurements as the path that beckons you. Take your passport, wallet and dreams and leave the rest. May you loosen the shackles of shame and be willing to walk naked to the gods. Understand that the derision, mockery, and scorn of those who do not understand what you seek or feel masks their own fear. A conscious man's real identity is seated in his heart and soul, not simply his head. Shed the expectations of others in favour of your own emergent truth. Maps are useful to learn, but learn also to follow the compass of your soul, especially in a darkly tangled wood. May you have the strength to be alone and value your own company until you discover your true soul tribe. May you engage the world in a less linear, more intuitive way, recovering a sense of breath and authentic movement and feeling. Realize that your entire being shifts, even your health, when you navigate with the heart. May you recognize the underlying importance of claiming our value as conscious men and that which we are bringing forth. Remember to continually give yourself away in generosity, knowing that our actions define us in this world. Trust that you are never separate from the mystery, and that grace unfolds in the most unexpected ways in unlooked-for moments. May you reawaken to the sacred and make room for it in your life. From your heart, bring something precious, vital, and hitherto unseen to the world. May you find the place in the world and community where you truly belong as an authentic soul. With your heart and senses open wide, in quiet moments, listen for the timeless song of the world. Be unafraid to sing in response.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.